Welcome to Blog Talk Radio. This is Westchester on the Level with your host, Hezzy Eris.
Good morning, everyone. Today is Friday. It's November 29th. It's part of the long Thanksgiving weekend. It's 10:36 in the morning. My apology for being late. I wasn't even sure if I'd be able to make it, but there's so much compelling news that since I just got into the office, I'll be able to share that with you. And so welcome. I hope you had a good Thanksgiving. Thank goodness we still had the parade, even though there was an incident. I didn't fully comprehend what it was. I didn't have the opportunity to read exactly what happened, but someone did get hurt. Evidently, a balloon went out of control. So let's get started with what's going on. And there is a lot that's going on that's really quite pertinent. Evidently, the Iraqi prime minister has announced his resignation amid a worsening crisis, and he calls, and there's a call from the top Shiite cleric as well. So Iraqi Prime Minister Adel Abdul Mahdi announced his resignation today after the country's top Shiite Muslim cleric called for lawmakers to reconsider their support for a government rocked by weeks of deadly anti-establishment unrest. Quote, in response to this call, and in order to facilitate it as quickly as possible, I will present to Parliament a demand to accept my resignation from the leadership of the current government, a statement signed by Abdul Mahdi had said. The statement did not say when he would resign. Parliament is to convene an emergency session on Sunday to discuss the crisis. Grand Ayatollah Ali al-Sistani earlier urged Parliament to consider withdrawing its support for Abdul Mahdi's government to stem spiraling violence. Security forces, meanwhile, shot dead at least three people in the southern city of Nasiriyah as clashes had continued. Iraqi forces have killed nearly 400, mostly young, unarmed demonstrators since mass anti-government protests broke out on October 1. More than a dozen members of the security forces have also died in clashes. Now, the burning of Iran's consulate in the holy city of Najaf on Wednesday escalated violence and drew a brutal response from security forces who shot dead more than 60 people nationwide on Thursday. The unrest is Iraq's biggest crisis for years. It pits protesters from Shiite heartlands in Baghdad and the south against a corrupt Shiite-dominated ruling elite seen as pawns of Iran. Now, Iraq's current political class is drawn mainly from powerful Shiite politicians, clerics, and paramilitary leaders, including many who lived in exile before a U.S.-led invasion overthrew Sunni dictator Saddam Hussein back in 2003. Sistani, who only weighs in on politics in times of crisis and wields huge influence over public opinion, warned on Friday against an explosion of civil strife and tyranny. He urged government forces to stop killing protesters and protesters themselves to reject all violence. The government, quote, appears to have been unable to deal with the events of the past 2 months. Parliament, from which the current government emerged, must reconsider its choices and do what's in the interest of Iraq, a representative of Sistani said in a televised sermon. Now, protesters, quote, must not allow peaceful demonstrations to be turned into attacks on property or people, end quote, he said. Wednesday's attack on the Iranian consulate in Najaf set off a sharp escalation of violence. On Thursday, security forces shot dead 46 people in another southern city, Nasiriyah, 18 in Najaf, and 4 in Baghdad, bringing the death toll from weeks of unrest to at least 417 people, most of them unnamed protesters, according to a Reuters tally from medical and police sources. Clashes between protesters and security forces broke out early on Friday in Nasiriyah, killing three people and wounding several others. That's what hospital sources advised. and Iraq's enemies and their apparatuses are trying to sow chaos and infighting to return the country to the age of dictatorship. Everyone must work together to thwart that opportunity, Sistani said, without elaborating. Whew. My God, who would have thought that this would come about, but it certainly has, and we will see where this all goes. Then we have another crisis, continuing crisis, seems to have infected the world. The police are holding a man after several have been hurt in a stabbing near the London Bridge. The Metropolitan Police of London on Friday said that several people were injured and a man was held after a stabbing near London Bridge in the center of the British capital. Emergency services cordoned off the area after reports of shots being fired. We are in the early stages of dealing with an incident at London Bridge, the Metropolitan Police tweeted. The force said it was called to a stabbing at a premises near the bridge at 1:58 in the afternoon local time. The man has been detained by police. We believe a number of people have been injured, it added. The London Ambulance Service also declared a major incident at London Bridge, adding there are, quote, a number of crews at the scene. It tweeted that on Friday. A BBC reporter on the bridge at the time said he saw what appeared to be a fight between a group of men, heard two shots, and saw a man prone on the ground. The incident happened on the north side of the bridge. People in the area were quickly ushered away from the scene. Images on social media indicated, and one eyewitness told the BBC, the British Broadcasting Corporation, she and other people in the area rushed into a restaurant on the bridge and were told by staff to take cover. They went, get under the table. Shots have been fired. Gunshots, said the woman. Footage by one Twitter user, Amanda Hunter 87, that's her handle, filmed from a bus on the southbound carriageway, appeared to show two armed force officers pointing guns toward a man on the ground. Other images from a high vantage point posted by another Twitter user, Claire Robo 1000, appeared to show the same moment. A third officer was standing by the two officers with their weapons raised. The man on the ground was on the pedestrian walkway on the north side of the bridge just as it starts to cross the river. In June of 2017, 8 people were killed and some 48 people were seriously injured when Islamist extremists in a van plowed into pedestrians on London Bridge before attacking people at random. The 3 attackers were shot dead by police. Whew. I tell you, it's unbelievable what's going on. Now, we have more stuff happening around the world with regard to suspects. Seems in France has put 20 suspects on trial over the 2015 November 13 Paris attacks. French prosecutors called Friday for 20 suspects to go on trial over the massacre of 130 people by suicide bombers and gunmen in Paris 4 years ago. In a 562-page indictment, the Office of the National Anti-Terror Prosecutor, PNAT, charged 14 people currently in prison or under judicial supervision, including Salah Abdesalam, the sole surviving suspected participant in the attacks. 6 others are currently targeted by arrest warrants, including Fabian and Jean-Michel Klein, notorious propagandists for the Islamic State group, which claimed responsibility for the killings. An Islamic State group online magazine claimed in March that the two brothers were killed in coalition airstrikes in Syria earlier this year. Now, the 5 judges overseeing investigations that wrapped up last month and who have worked with colleagues in Austria, Germany, Greece, and Bulgaria will now decide when to hold the trial expected in Paris in 2021. The PNAT said 1,740 civil plaintiffs have joined the case against the suspected organizers of one of the deadliest attacks in French history. A total of 130 people died in the November 13, 2015 assault by 10 heavily armed gunmen who attacked during a football match at the National Stadium outside of Paris and then at bars and restaurants in the capital as well as the Bataclan concert hall. All detonated their explosive vests or were killed by police except Abdesalam, who was arrested in Belgium 4 months later. He has refused to cooperate with investigators and remains in solitary confinement. The other suspects facing trial have been charged with helping to organize or finance the attacks or helping the gunmen to flee. They include Oussama Attar, a Belgian-Moroccan citizen who is thought to have helped orchestrate the attack from Raqqa, the former capital of the Islamic State group, so-called Caliphate in Syria. Attar was reportedly killed in early 2018, but his death has not been officially confirmed. And since 2015, France has been struck by a wave of jihadist terror strikes that have claimed the lives of over 250 people. The same jihadist cell blamed for the Paris attacks is also believed to have struck the airport and metro system of Brussels in March of 2016, killing 32 people. The violence is unbelievable wherever you seem to go nowadays. So, one second. All right, this is very interesting as well. The European Parliament has declared climate emergency, quote unquote, ahead of the United Nations summit. The European Parliament voted yesterday to declare a climate and environmental emergency, quote unquote, in a symbolic gesture just ahead of the latest United Nations Global Crisis Summit. The legislature sitting in Strasbourg backed the motion by a comfortable 429 to 225 majority, increasing pressure on European Union capitals and the European Commission to take more drastic action. Now, the motion urges the Commission, quote, to ensure that all relevant legislative and budgetary proposals are fully aligned with the objective of limiting global warming to under 1.5 degrees. That's Celsius, which would be equivalent to reducing it to 35.7 degrees Fahrenheit. Now, given the climate and environmental emergency, it is essential to reduce our greenhouse gas emissions by 55% in 2030, said Pascal Canfin, the minister of the European Parliament who heads the Environment Committee. Now, among the dissenters were some members of the right-wing European People's Party, the largest group in the parliament. This is an urgency to act, but no state of emergency to declare, said the European parliamentarian deputy Peter Liese, L-I-E-S-E, warning against giving an impression of panic, quote unquote. The vote came a day after the same parliament voted to endorse a new European Commission that plans a European Green Deal, quote unquote, to transform the bloc's economy for a low carbon future. The motion does not legally oblige Brussels to take any specific measures, but environmental groups seized on it to demand practical action. Now, declaring an emergency is important, but any such statement seems to be followed by emergency action, said Wendell Trio, the director of the Climate Action Network Europe, Wayne. C-A-N-E, Climate Action Network Europe. To act at the scale of the climate emergency, the Parliament needs to push for real, immediate action, he said. The European Union needs to increase the climate target to at least 65% emission cuts and adopt policies and measures that can reduce emissions immediately. The 12-day COP25 United Nations Climate Summit will take place in Spain from Monday with the aim of encouraging governments to increase their commitments to cut emissions and combat climate change. Now, on Sunday, the new president of the European Commission, Ursula von der Leyen, will take office, promising to boost investment in green technology. But many green ministers of the European Parliament abstained in the vote to approve her commission, expressing skepticism the plan would go far enough. So even before she begins her position, this is the sort of stuff that's going on. Now, here are some remedies that are taking place. We'll see if they work. Chile has announced $20 billion injection to stop economic crash in Chile. Chile's central bank announced yesterday a $20 billion injection into the economy aimed at curbing the plummeting value of the peso. The economy has been battered by the country's worst social unrest in three decades, as well as a fall in the price of copper, of which Chile is the world's leading producer. The peso lost 1.1% of its value on Thursday, reaching a record low for the second day in a row and closing at 828.36 pesos to the dollar. And this follows a 1.6% drop on Wednesday when the peso hit 812 to the dollar. The central bank said its intervention is justified because, quote, an excessive degree of volatility in exchange rate hampers the formulation of pricing, expenditure decisions, and the production of people and companies, causing, quote, concerns in the markets. From Monday, December 2nd, until May 29 of 2020, the institution will sell dollars on the foreign exchange market for up to $10 billion and hedging risk instruments for up to $10 billion more. Now, the move comes after the central bank announced a $4 billion foreign currency injection on November 13, a move to, quote, mitigate eventual tensions, end quote, in financial markets. The bank said on Thursday the fluctuation in the peso's value would have no immediate effect on households and businesses, with inflation remaining at a moderate level below 3%. Now, the peso has lost about 15% of its value since October 18, when violent protests broke out over social and economic inequality. It's amazing what's going on around the world. It literally is amazing. Now, we move on to Malta. Malta's prime minister says that no immunity is granted for a suspect in the journalist killing. Malta's prime minister, Joseph Muscat, said today the main suspect in the 2017 killing of investigative journalist Daphne Caruana Galizia would not be granted immunity to disclose what he knows about the case. After the emergency cabinet meetings are dragged on for more than 6 hours through the night, Muscat told reporters the decision to deny an immunity request for suspect Johan Fennec followed the recommendations of the Attorney General and Police Commissioner. An intensifying probe into the murder of Caruana Galizia, who was blown up by a car bomb in October of 2017, has destabilized Muscat's government. This week, two ministers and a chief of staff, Keith Chembri, have stepped down from their posts. The death of Caruana Galizia, a popular journalist and blogger described as a one-woman WikiLeaks who exposed corruption in Malta, shocked the country and sparked protests for justice. Muscat said he recused himself from the decision over Fennec since the suspect under police interrogation had identified Chembri as the mastermind behind Caruana Galizia's killing, according to sources. Johan Fennec asked for a pardon for the second time after making allegations about Keith Chembri, so I did not want to shoulder the responsibility myself and called in the cabinet, Muscat told reporters, saying their decision was unanimous. On Thursday evening, as Muscat and his ministers met behind closed doors, police said Chembri, who was arrested on Tuesday, had been released. Muscat has been heavily criticized over the government's handling of the case, and on Tuesday, they vowed to resign if links were found between himself and the murder. On Friday, he said his government was, quote, committed to investigate all allegations of illegalities, end quote. And continuing, he said, I want this case to be closed under my watch, said Muscat. The political fallout of the investigation gathered momentum on Tuesday as Chembri resigned, as did Tourism Minister Konrad Mitzi, while Economy Minister Chris Cardona, Cardona said he was suspending himself. Fennec is a tycoon whose business interests span the energy and tourism sectors, was arrested on his yacht last week. After a middleman in the murder, Melvin Teuma, was offered a pardon to identify those involved. On Thursday, Fennec filed a request in court to remove the chief prosecutor in the case, Keith Arnault, alleging that he had been informing Chembri of details in the murder probe. Fennec also alleged that Arnault had a conflict of interest, having previously sought the chief of staff's help in finding a job for his wife. Caruana Galizia, who exposed cronyism and sleaze within the country's political and business elite, had alleged that Chembri and Mitzi had been involved in corruption. Leaked emails revealed in court appeared to show both politicians stood to receive payments from a Dubai company called 17 Black, owned by Fennec. The family of Caruana Galizia has called for Muscat to resign, saying he has blood on his hands, quote-unquote, for protecting Chembri and Mitzi. The European Parliament will send a mission to Malta, according to German Greens Minister of the European Parliament, Sven Giegold. A new mission was warranted given, quote, questions around the independence of the judicial system and severe allegations of corruption at the highest level, said Giegold, who went to the Mediterranean islands on a similar assignment after Caruana Galizia's death, so said in a statement. Amazing what's happening. Now, this is also another event. Australian students have kicked off a global climate change protest. Thousands of Australian students walked out of class on Friday to join rallies demanding stronger action to rein in climate change, which they said is contributing to the country's bushfire crisis. Australia has been battling wildfires for weeks, which have killed at least four people, burnt about 2.5 million acres of farmland and bush, and destroyed more than 500 homes. The rallies in Sydney and other major Australian cities were the first in a series of protests by students across the globe demanding governments do more to protect the environment. The protests come ahead of the annual United Nations Climate Conference that starts in Madrid on Monday. Now, holding homemade signs, including, quote, "The climate is changing, why aren't we?" Protesters in Sydney accused the government of inadequate action in addressing Australia's bushfire crisis. Smoke from the bushfires in New South Wales state formed a haze overhead. Our quote, "Our government's inaction on the climate crisis has supercharged bushfires," said the 18-year-old Sian Broderick, one of the event's organizers, whose home was destroyed in a bushfire. Quote, "People are hurting. Communities like ours are being devastated. Summer hasn't even begun." Australia's Prime Minister, Scott Morrison, has previously rejected suggestions his government is not doing enough to address climate change. Australia has pledged to cut carbon emissions by 26% from 2005 levels by 2030, but data released on Friday shows the country's greenhouse gas emissions were roughly unchanged in the 12 months that ended in June. The release of the data came as firefighters continued to battle more than 150 blazes still alight across the country. The fires have left the more than 5 million people residing in Sydney struggling over hazardous air pollution that has lingered for much of the last week. While a cool change has eased the threat of more fires, Australia's Bureau of Meteorology on Thursday said much of the country will suffer from continued hot and dry conditions this summer, increasing the chances of more bushfires. Unbelievable. So this is unbelievable stuff, what I can tell you. And this is very interesting as well. The Turkish foreign minister has countered Emmanuel Macron, Macron's Syria criticism by accusing him of sponsoring terrorism. Turkish Foreign Minister Mevlut Cavusoglu on Thursday dismissed French President Emmanuel Macron's criticism of Turkey's offensive in Syria against the Kurdish YPG militia, saying the French leader sponsors terrorism. Quote, he is already the sponsor of the terrorist organization and constantly hosts them at the Elysee. If he says his ally is a terrorist organization, there is really nothing more to say, Cavusoglu said. Right now, there is a void in Europe. Macron is trying to be its leader, but leadership comes naturally, he told reporters in Parliament last month. Macron met Jihan Ahmed, the spokeswoman for the U.S.-backed Syrian Democratic Forces, the SDF, of which the YPG is a big part, to express France's solidarity with them in their fight against Islamic State in Syria. Now, Turkey considers the YPG as a terrorist group and has been infuriated by the support its allies have given the group. Now, the Turkish assault, launched on October 9, was condemned by Ankara's NATO allies, including France. Earlier on Thursday, Macron said that Turkey could not expect solidarity from NATO allies when it launched its offensive in northeast Syria as a fait accompli. Well, the ties between Turkey and France have been strained in recent years, but Macron and Cavusoglu's comments on Thursday highlight growing tensions ahead of NATO's 70th anniversary summit in London next week. Now, Reuters reported on Tuesday that Turkey was refusing to back a NATO defense plan for the Baltics and Poland until it got more political support for its fight against the YPG. On Wednesday, a Turkish source said the impasse stemmed from the United States' move to withdraw its support for a separate Turkey defense plan. Asked about the stalemate, Cavusoglu said that NATO needed to act in a way that addresses the concerns of all its allies, but added that Ankara wanted to find a middle ground over the defense plan stalemate. Quote, we are not against this NATO plan for the Baltics, however. What is being requested for the Baltic countries should also be done for us. We are also allies, Cavusoglu had said. Well, we'll see where that goes. Very, very interesting. Okay, so, one second. Now, in the Amazon, evidently German Amazon workers are striking on Black Friday. More than 2,000 Amazon workers in Germany walked off the job as the United States online retail kicked off its Black Friday sales bonanza, escalating a long simmering battle for better pay and working conditions. Now, the strike, called by the powerful Verdi, V-E-R-D-I union, was set to last until Tuesday morning and will also cover Cyber Monday, another extravaganza of online discounts in what is a crucial sales period for Amazon. Some 2,200 employees took part in Friday's walkouts at Amazon distribution centers in Leipzig, Bad Hersfeld, Koblenz, Rheinberg, Werner und Graben, a Verdi spokeswoman had said. Now, their work cannot be had at rock-bottom prices, Verdi said in a statement, demanding a collective labor agreement to ensure, quote, a living wage and good, healthy jobs. The union accused Amazon of, quote, withholding basic rights, end quote, from staff and of making them work, quote, under extreme pressure, end quote. As a result, they say, many employees become ill. That's what Verdi had said. Amazon played down the strike's impact, saying packages will arrive on time, quote unquote. The company has long resisted the union's call for labor negotiations, defending its work environment, and insisting that it is one of the best employers in the logistics business or industry. We pay at the upper end of what is usual for comparable work. We offer additional benefits and review pages annually. Wages annually, the company said. The majority of its 13,000 employees in 13 logistics centers across Germany will be working as normal, it added. Amazon has been hit by repeated strikes in Germany and other countries in recent years. Last year's Black Friday event saw stoppages by workers in Spain, Germany, and Britain. So who knows? This might actually move forward and show up in the United States as well. You just never can tell. That's how things work. Now, let's just see what else is going on, which I think you may find interesting. bear with me a moment. And okay, wanted to quickly go here. Bear with me a second. All right, I wanted to see what else is happening. One moment here. Now, I think we've caught up in the middle with respect to Middle East news. Want to check if anything else is happening in our hemisphere, north and south. Oh, this is really, really quite interesting. It seems that flying fish, they're an undisputed icon of Barbados, is featured as the main ingredient in the national dish, is printed inside its passport and stamped on the $1 coin. But in recent years, the number of flying fish has declined, driving up prices to the point that the island's staple food is now becoming a luxury. So multiple theories exist for the fall in numbers, but most of them point to climate change, which has both forced the fish to flee to cooler waters further from the coast and contributed to the massive influx of sargassum. And since the arrival of the brown algae in the Caribbean in 2011, flying fish landings have plummeted by almost 15%. Today, the government, researchers, and international organizations are working to help fishermen adapt to this changing climate while preserving the symbol of a nation. It's amazing what's happening. You know, in an analogy, of course, when in the United States, we thought that we would lose our official bird, the eagle. My God. You know, these things matter. It's amazing how important these issues become, and yet it makes so much sense for sure. And so we'll see where all that goes. Now, let's just move on to see what else is happening in our world. Let's see if anything is happening in the business world that we haven't covered for you. I think that we have. And this is interesting as well, which is a government edict, evidently. French lawmakers are pushing to ban Black Friday sales, citing, quote, overconsumption, end quote. Well, it seems dozens of French activists blocked an Amazon warehouse south of Paris in a Black Friday-inspired protest amid increased opposition to the post-Thanksgiving sales phenomenon that has seen a group of French lawmakers push to ban it altogether. Now, protesters from climate group Amis de la Terre, which means Friends of the Earth, spread hay and old refrigerators and microwaves on the driveway leading to the warehouse in Bretigny-sur-Orge on Thursday, and they held signs in front of the gates reading Amazon, for the climate, for jobs, stop expansion, stop overproduction. The activists were later dislodged by police, and more demonstrators are expected as Black Friday looms into view. French climate groups are planning Black Friday demonstrations on Friday. Their objections are garnering some support within France's National Assembly, and some French lawmakers want to ban Black Friday, which has morphed into a global phenomenon, even though it stems from a specifically U.S. holiday, Thanksgiving Thursday. A French legislative committee passed an amendment on Monday that proposes prohibiting Black Friday since it causes, quote, resource waste and, quote, overconsumption, end quote. The amendment, which was put forward by France's former environment minister Delphine Bateau, will be debated next month. And France's e-commerce union has condemned it. On Europe One Radio on Thursday, France's ecological transition minister Elisabeth Borne criticized Black Friday for creating, quote, traffic jams, pollution, and gas emissions, end quote. She added that she would support Black Friday if it helped small French businesses, but said it mostly benefits large online retailers, which is really quite smart, but it is actually very logical. And that is really the case. So, and let's see what else is happening 1 second. Let's see, we haven't visited Africa all the time, so we keep forgetting. However, 1 second here. I want to make sure. They got similar issues to around the rest of the world, unfortunately. Evidently, 8 people have been detained in Gabon in anti-corruption crackdown. Well, see, the oil-rich Gabon has detained 8 people for theft and money laundering following a crackdown on corruption, the prosecutor of the capital, Libreville, had said on Thursday. 8 people have been placed in preventive detention, André Patrick Roponat had said, adding that they were accused of siphoning off public funds and money laundering. The pro-government newspaper Le Union, reported on Wednesday that more than 85 million central French francs, CFA francs, that's about a value of $142-45 million, have evaporated over the past 2 years from the funds of the Gabon oil company, the GOC. Accusations that scores of millions of euros have disappeared from staff coffers swirl around top officials, including Brice Lacrouche Ali Hanga, who for more than 2 years served as cabinet director to President Ali Bongo. And Lacrouche was dismissed from his post on November 7 at the start of a wave of arrests in the Central African country, but he announced on social media that he would undertake a new mission for the president and for Gabon. That's a quote. The current investigations are a follow-up to Operation Mamba, an anti-corruption campaign launched in 2017 by Bongo, who has been battling serious illness. So, very disconcerting, to say the least. Then we have things that are going on in Sudan. Evidently, Sudan has approved a law to, quote, dismantle former regime, repeal Bashir-era limits on women's rights as well. So the Sudanese transitional authorities approved the law on Thursday to dissolve ex-president Omar al-Bashir's party and repealed a public order law used to regulate women's behavior under the former regime, the justice minister had said. The party condemned the illegal government's move, and ousted President Omar al-Bashir's Islamist National Congress Party, the NCP, on Friday condemned Sudan's new, quote, illegal government, end quote, for ordering its closure, the confiscation of its assets, and the dismantling of Bashir's regime that ruled the country for 30 years. Well, the National Congress Party, Omar al-Bashir's Islamist group, accused the authorities of wanting to use its assets to tackle Sudan's economic crisis, which it said the new government has failed to address. Quote, to rely on the assets of the party, if there are any, is nothing more than a moral scandal, an act of intellectual bankruptcy, and a total failure on the part of the illegal government, the National Congress Party said on its Facebook page. The party is not bothered by any law or decision issued against it, as the NCP is a strong party and its ideas will prevail. Well, the transitional authorities' dissolution of the NCP and the confiscation of its assets responded to key demands by a protest movement that helped overthrow Bashir in April. Now, their implementation will be a crucial test of how far transitional authorities are willing to or able to go to overturn nearly 3 decades of rule by Bashir, who took office in a 1989 coup and whose Islamist movement penetrated deep into Sudan's institutions. The law to dissolve Bashir's National Congress Party, the NCP, also allows for the party's assets to be seized, Justice Minister Nasreddin Abdelbari had said. Now, state TV described it as a measure to, quote, dismantle, end quote, the former regime. The Sudanese Professionals Association, the SPA, which spearheaded the protests against Bashir, welcomed the law. Quote, It is an important step on the path of building a democratic civilian state, the group said in a statement. The law was passed during a marathon 14-hour meeting of Sudan's Sovereign Council and Cabinet. The meeting saw disputes over an article that bans people who took leading posts in the former regime from practicing politics, sources with knowledge of the proceedings had told Reuters. Well, Prime Minister Abdallah Hamdok said on Twitter that the measure was not an act of revenge, but was rather aimed at preserving the dignity of the Sudanese people. You hear how this always goes back and forth. One person says one thing, the other says the opposite, and it's all based on trying to maintain their capacity and their wealth and their position. Well, Information Minister Faisal Mohamed Saleh said the delay in approving the law was caused by work, quote, to improve it. Quote, by this law, we want to establish a new era, he said. Well, in the capital of Khartoum, some drivers hooted car horns in celebration after the late night announcements, while others exchanged slogans from the uprising on social media. Hamdok's government was formed in September after a power-sharing deal between al-Bashir's groups and the transitional military council that ruled the country immediately after Bashir's overthrow. Transitional authorities are due to hold power for just over 3 years before elections. Under Bashir, the public order law was deployed to impose conservative Islamic social codes restricting women's freedom of dress, movement, association, work, and study. This could include preventing women from wearing trousers or leaving their hair uncovered in public or mixing with men other than their husbands or an immediate relative. Those found to have contravened the law would be punished with flogging. Hamdok called the rules, quote, an instrument of exploitation, humiliation, violation, aggression on the rights of citizens, end quote. And women played a prominent role in months of protests against Bashir. Women's rights activist Hadia Hasabala said the repeal of the law showed the failure of Islamist ideology. The decision to abolish the public order law is a culmination of the courageous struggles of women for 30 years, she told Reuters. Women martyrs deserve it. Very, very compelling, and so true. Well, I think we're really arriving at an age where women will be the deciding factor in almost everything. They may have always been, but never in the forefront. Now they will be right there in your face, whether we like it or not. And I don't know who wouldn't like it, because they seem to be on a righteous path. And hopefully they don't get infested by the disease that has captured and infected men over all these years. Okay, well, let's just see what else is going on around the world. Bear with me a moment. And I want to go over to Asia. We have not been there. We haven't had an opportunity to cover it for a while. So that becomes very pertinent. Oh, well, before I go there, I wanted to cover this because this just came about. Napoleon's boots are walking tall at a Paris auction. Go figure on that one. It seems a pair of boots worn by Napoleon during his final exile on St. Helena sold in Paris on Friday for $128,000, more than twice the initial estimate. The size 40 boots, roughly 7 in British measure, were saved for posterity by General Henri Gatien Bertrand, who had followed the French leader into exile on the far-flung South Atlantic island after his defeat at the Battle of Waterloo in 1815, auctioneers had said. The general later gave the shoes to a sculptor working on an equestrian statue of Bonaparte. The relics were expected to fetch between 50 and 80,000 euros, but bidding at the Drouot auctions room was brisk. Like Imelda Marcos, the former First Lady of the Philippines, Napoleon had a large collection of footwear, which he bought from the Paris shoemakers Jacques in Montmartre. Although British propagandists often caricatured the Corsican as an authoritarian midget, a 1.69 meter, which is actually a 5'2" man. He was actually above average height for his time. His family has kept them ever since, said auctioneer Binoche Guy Caillot and General Bertrand. Returned to France after the death of his beloved leader back in 1821. And many French people still suspect that Napoleon was poisoned by British jailers. Some historians, however, are convinced he was slowly murdered with arsenic administered by Count Charles de Montholon, his closest friend on the island. They think he was blackmailed by French royalists into lacing the emperor's wine with the poison after he was caught stealing money. So unbelievable. You know, it's amazing how history comes back, and it's just very, very fascinating. And this is also very fascinating. Again, back in Europe, we will get to Asia very shortly. Evidently, the Macron-Stoltenberg meeting, that of French President defends the French president's wake-up call for NATO. And you've got to listen to this story. And this will be about almost 5 minutes, but I think you'll find it very compelling. Bear with me a moment here. One second. Okay.
At the analysis, Jonathan Isle joins us. He's Associate Director at the Royal United Services Institute. Jonathan, thank you for being with us. We heard from Jens Stoltenberg and from Emmanuel Macron. I'll start with Macron's assessment about NATO being basically brain dead. Where do you stand on that?
Well, I'm not sure that this discussion is particularly useful. I mean, it is right for the French president to ask the question of whether the alliance is adapted for today's world. The difficulty, however, is that what the French president is suggesting that is that a new European structure should replace NATO, which up to now was not the view of most countries, including France. Up to now, the argument was that the Europeans should do more for their own defense in parallel with NATO, or when NATO doesn't want to get involved. So the president's cri de coeur, the president's suggestions that something must be done to reform the alliance are absolutely correct. Unfortunately, his recipe is not one that is accepted by most other member states. In fact, if we look over the last few weeks since the famous interview in which he proclaimed the alliance brain dead was published, we will see that actually France achieved less rather than more cohesion on the subject of European defense. The Germans came very strongly only the other day. Chancellor Merkel suggested very strongly that NATO remains the linchpin of their security, and the East Europeans are absolutely alarmed by what is being said in Paris. So I'm not sure this is particularly constructive either for the alliance or for France's foreign policy.
And on the subject of Macron, given we're coming to you from Paris here, Turkey, only a few hours ago, their foreign minister, Mevlut Davutoglu, accusing him of supporting terrorism because of that meeting he had with the Syrian Democratic Forces. Is in some way here Emmanuel Macron proving to be quite a divisive figure within the structure?
Well, first of all, it's worth remembering that Turkey has been a difficult customer, a difficult member of the North Atlantic Treaty Organization for decades. We tend to forget in the 70s and in the 80s, the confrontation between Greece and Turkey was much more important to both of them than the Cold War. So the alliance is used to deal with a very, very difficult member state, which is Turkey. I wouldn't say for a second that France is the problem in the relationship with Turkey. I think the French president is absolutely right to raise the question of how much of a cohesion we can get in the alliance with a Turkey behaving the way it is. The consensus, however, still remains everywhere, including, dare I say, in Paris, that having a Turkey inside the alliance with all the difficulties is still better than having Turkey outside the alliance. So I wouldn't say that that there is any blame on the French for the behavior of the Turks. I think in many respects, President Macron has adopted a much more constructive attitude towards Turkey, and I wouldn't be too excited by accusations from Ankara about supposedly consorting with terrorism. Quite frankly, Ankara itself has a lot to answer.
I think you know my next question is going to be about Donald Trump, his attitude towards NATO, of course, his decision to withdraw the troops from northeastern Syria gave, in many ways, Turkey that green light to go ahead with their incursion. Is Trump the main problem, the main threat to NATO right now?
Well, clearly, Trump is the first president since the Second World War, since NATO was established 70 years ago, who is actually questioning the utility of the alliance, in fact, questioning whether the United States security guarantee or the mutual security guarantee of the alliance is worthwhile upholding. So, again, the French president was right to suggest that Mr. Trump is a very, very difficult partner. But let us remember, at the end of the day, the big dispute in Europe is whether Trump is a one-off, an individual who is quite unique in American political life and who is going to go away sooner or later to be replaced by someone else, or whether, as the French president seems to suggest, Trump is part of a phenomenon of a more isolationist United States. The problem for the French is that most of the alliance still believes that Trump is a one-off and still points out to the fact that there is a solid support for the alliance in Washington among Congress and among other decision makers.
Jonathan Ayle of the Royal United Services Institute, thank you very much for joining us. Thank you for your assessment of the situation.
Oh, fantastic. Very well balanced, as you can hear, and it becomes a really a big issue for Europe as well as the United States. And I guess the president, whether people want to agree or not, certainly what's really fascinating is that you've got people who are for Trump and not for Trump. But from my perspective, I look at it and I say, you know, there's nothing necessarily wrong with Trump's position with respect to his demand that Europe put more of its own resources into NATO, and that they should become more responsible for maintaining it rather than looking to the United States for bolstering it with funds from the U.S. So that they should take care of Europe and allow America to take care of America and so on. And there should be a balancing act there to a great extent. And but they haven't come to that conclusion. And then this particular issue also points out that Europe is torn. But the so-called isolationist concepts that are seemingly gurgling to the top of the water, evidently they're starting to reveal that there is a schism within Europe, that America is becoming more isolationist and from the world stage, and that is not necessarily a negative term, because I think that to some extent America must focus on America, but at the same time, because of its magnanimity and its history, it's always shown a deference to Europe and to some extent, and that becomes a policy decision that will end up being decided by whoever is in government and how they view things. It'll be very interesting to see if there is an evolution to that concept. But while America hasn't yet made a decision, not a formal decision, but it has in other places which inform Europe of America's conduct, certainly under this administration. What will be interesting thereafter is how will Europe conduct its business now, whether America becomes more insulated from the rest of the world and removed from the rest of the world, and what they will be doing in anticipation of that fact, or even in anticipation of just accommodating a slight need to change, maybe a nuanced change by the American side. And that becomes very important. But it becomes really a issue that must be taken up by the Europeans, and they must be able to conduct that. And also, you know, Europe has to stand up a little bit more strongly when it comes against the Turks. But the Turks have taken, as we just pointed out to you, they've taken this offensive against Macron and the Europeans. And but they're a difficult member, and they always have been. And people don't remember, but I'm old enough to remember and old enough to have been informed by the politics of the day. So I did pay attention years ago when maybe 20 or 25 years ago, it goes back. They were pertinent in my life for no other reason than I was interested in politics and the world stage. And they mattered. And their fight with Greece, I found extremely objectionable. And they have really ripped the place apart. Look at what they've done. The legacy of Turkey is to split Cyprus in half. This is just unbelievable. It was a land grab then, and it's just insanity, just totally insanity. But it was permitted to stay in place, which is also really, really pathetic. Now let's see what else is going on. One second. Actually, I think we've covered. Yeah, I don't have anything more. One second. Yeah, I don't think I've got anything else here. In Asia that we haven't covered, I think that we have. And this goes back to what we were just talking about. Evidently, there's a new European Union leadership which is eyeing more assertive role for the bloc. So it seems that the European Union plans a bigger global role for itself, one of its new chiefs emphasized today. As the bloc's leadership started changing the guard to a team with firm geopolitical ambitions. The time has come for the European Union to become more confident, self-assured, and assertive on the world stage, notably by building common defense and security structures, said Charles Michel, taking over as the new European Council president. So his pledges match the ambition voiced by French President Emmanuel Macron, who argues that Europe should have defense capabilities to match its economic heft. See, this is what we're talking about. So it also echoes the next head of the European Commission, former German defense minister Ursula von der Leyen, saying she wants to oversee a geopolitical European Union executive. She takes charge from Sunday, succeeding Commission President Jean-Claude Juncker, who was from Luxembourg. And while the European Union's leaders stress they are not looking to replace NATO, their muscular positioning speaks to growing realization in Europe that a volatile U.S. ally and an encroaching China requires the bloc to rely more on itself. The aspirations also feeds into von der Leyen's goal of a zero carbon future, which will demand a rethinking of economic, technological, and societal priorities. Michel, a 43-year-old Belgian prime minister, underlined his lockstep with the commission, saying, quote, "I want Europe to become the global leader of the green movement," end quote. He took over from Donald Tusk, who is from Poland, as the chief of the European Council, which represents the national leaders of the European Union member states who have final say over much of the bloc's business. Now, Tusk, who's 62 and a former Polish prime minister, was applauded at length during the simple handover ceremony with Michel, during which a small bell was rung and passed over in a symbolic transition of office. The accolade, which brought Tusk to the brink of tears, reflected his five-year run dousing various European Union crises, from Greece's near exit from the Eurozone to jihadist attacks in several countries and a migration crisis. He was brilliant. But Tusk is to remain deeply involved in European Union politics. He is to become the leader of the European family of conservative parties across the bloc, the European People's Party, which is the biggest grouping in the European Parliament. Michel, in a nod to Tusk's famous bluntness, said that while he too was, quote, open to dialogue, end quote, he would be, quote, perhaps more cautious with my tweets, at least at the beginning, but I will also speak out when needed, end quote. Well, Juncker, meanwhile, had his own low-key bow out on Friday when he bid farewell to journalists at a daily media briefing usually handled by underlings. There, he refused to give any advice to von der Leyen on how to approach the job of running the commission beyond telling her, take care of Europe, quote, unquote. He did say he was, quote, highly concerned, end quote, about the erosion of the rule of law in Eastern European Union members, such as Hungary, where judicial and media independence have been subjected to strain. But that was now the next team's problem. Juncker, known for his insouciance and humor, spent more time recounting a couple of anecdotes from his long career in European politics, including the time decades ago that former U.S. President Bill Clinton and French leader Jacques Chirac offhandedly made clear their services were tapping his mobile phone. gotta love this stuff that happens. Anyway, and in his inimitable bon vivant style, Juncker, 64, brought his farewell to a close with the words, quote, I'm hungry, end quote. Oh, what a character. But these are all brilliant people, and they have lent so much of their knowledge and their passion for the European platform as opposed to individual countries. And it is just really breathtaking when you think about it. Wow. So we'll have to see where things go. One more second. I wanted to quickly check if there's any changes on some of the news stories. I think not. I think we've caught up. I think we've really been caught up. Yep. Okay. So there we are. And so we had a truncated day today, started late, about 10:38. Now I see it's 11:38, so we've been together an hour. And there's really nothing more to give expression to at the moment, so I wish you a good day and a happy and joyous Thanksgiving, belatedly. And, you know what I would like to do, actually, before we go, I wanted to read to you what I wrote yesterday with respect to thanking our readers, because I think it's pertinent and it needs to be again expressed. Now, let's just quickly look at this one thing here. Bear with me a moment. I've got to go to my website. And okay. Yeah, and here this is. It's called Best Wishes for a Happy Thanksgiving, Yonkers, written by me, Hezzy Harris. So it's also a happy Thanksgiving to Bronxville, which we cover, Mount Vernon, which we cover, Austin, which we cover, and Westchester County to a lesser degree, but we're certainly all over the place. So we begin by saying that Thanksgiving affords each of us an opportunity to take a breath so as to contemplate that for which we are thankful. I am deeply grateful to our readers and listeners for their friendship, encouragement, support, and engagement in discourse for which I have been at times chastised and at other times encouraged to be more bold. By every measure, the Yonkers Tribune has grown by your trust of what we do for the most part. It is satisfying to be appreciated and even more satisfying to be challenged by the learning process to which Yonkers has proven itself to be an incubator of concepts and ideas that prove valid over the long term. It must be recognized, as I do consciously, that were it not for the integrity and support of insiders, the Yonkers Tribune would be a valueless exercise. We continue to be challenged in hearing one perspective, even a second and a third. That is the very elixir upon which the Yonkers Tribune thrives. Your openness and kindness in sharing facts rather than fiction has energized me for over two decades to elevate the Yonkers Tribune product to better reflect your issues, concerns, and needs. It is akin to manna from heaven for me. It sustains me because your sharing your thoughts with the Yonkers Tribune is the rationale for continuing to serve the city that I have learned to love, respect, admire, when or without the blemishes that may be gleaned. Our most recent investigations continue to reveal the complexity of issues and concerns. The Blue Truth series is now approaching the 8th year of introspection. The conduct regarding students' general obligation accounts was an eye-opener, as was the revelation of the theft of teachers' sick bank accruals. The political campaigns for elected office continues to excite and engage. The timeline of events that people in the know share regarding the recent alleged driving under the influence accident is compelling and on target. The adage of, if you see something, say something, has captured the imagination of many in Westchester County. The trust afforded the Yonkers Tribune is the catalyst that has informed my humility, and that is a good thing. I recognize how pertinent it has become to thereby satiate my demeanor and perspective. It has informed and recalibrated a cerebral equilibrium in my reporting skills that is lost in much of journalism today. Another reason for my being thankful. Upon reflection, the above are the gifts you afforded me. I hope you have found the work given expression on the Yonkers Tribune is a worthy gift in kind to you. Well, Yonkers Tribune is the embodiment of muckraking journalism. We are the incarnation, perhaps the scion, of the likes of Jack Anderson, deceased since 2005, considered one of the fathers of modern investigative journalism. The focus of the Yonkers Tribune is hyperlocal. Jack Anderson was the sirens of Greek mythology who, by their seductive singing, enticed unknowing wayfarers to abandon the cramped boredom of safe passage for a hazardous try at strange excitements and gratifications. Yonkers Tribune has become your siren, and the wayfarers are the insiders who share and define the disparity and convulsions that come about in societies who have forgotten of ethical standards that once defined the difference and disparity between right and wrong. And readers and listeners know that their story will be heard. And if you want to be in touch with us, you can direct your concern by email to ehezzy@hush.com. Simply sentence simply sentence an email stating you want to engage in any subject, and I in turn will respond by sending you an encrypted email to which you may state your concern free from prying eyes. And I was still proud that years and years ago, I don't know how many years ago it goes back, the Yonkers Tribune was designated the home of the Acid Tongue Bloggers by, are you sitting down, folks, the New York Times, and we try to live up to their assertion. And by doing so, we meet the needs and the requirements of the people of Yonkers and Bronxville and Mount Vernon and Westchester County and Ossining, of course. So that's our story, and I want to thank you again for being with us. All the best to you. Have a great weekend. Stay safe, and I guess what else is there? And love one another. Be good. Bye.